A lot of technical difficulties. Hi, everybody. My name is Rob Couch, and I'm from Building Game Podcast. And welcome once again to Something from Nothing, our bi-weekly Google Hangout, where we talk about game design with game designers. And we have some wonderful guests with us here. I should probably start by apologizing for the technical problems, but we got them all worked out now. So let's start with you, Corey. If you would introduce yourself to the audience and tell them a little bit about who you are and your claims to fame, sir.
Sure. Corey Young. I live in Dayton, Ohio. I've been designing games for about 7 years now. Got my first game published. The game is called Gravwell, and I expect to see it in stores. This is unofficial, but in November, early November.
That's awesome.
Yeah, let's hope. Then I have another game that's going to be out in 2014 through Academy Games. That one's called Santorini. And I'm designing several more right now of varying types. Most of my games are lighter. The scale on BGG is from 1 to 5, and most folks are ranking mine between 2 and 3. So
okay, great. Yeah, man, everybody was talking about Gravwell Gen Con this year, so congratulations on that. I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but it sounds excellent.
I hope you get a chance soon.
Yeah, and Scott, how about you?
I'm Scott Holmes. I've designed Martian Dice and Kings of Arenstein are my two that are out right now. This next year, there's going to be another 6, maybe 7 released of mine. A lot during the first quarter will be Kickstarted. And the first one up will probably be an expansion for Kings of Arenstein, which I'm very excited about. But my games are kind of all over the map. Kings of Arenstein's a little bit heavier. Martian Dice is about as light as they come. Doing a children's game, children's storytelling game, so I'm really everywhere. I just like games.
Cool.
Just like games.
Great. And finally, our clown there.
Yeah, the traveling game designer.
Yeah, TC Petty. Hey.
Yeah, so I'm hooked into the iPhone, and I'm TC Petty III. I will have a little nice snazzy thing on the bottom here because I'm just using the phone and trying to do things, but this is kind of the workaround to get me so you can actually hear me and I don't have a robot voice.
Yeah, no more of that ridiculous buzzing and squealing that we had a few minutes ago.
Exactly. Well, I make Viva Java, the coffee game, and other games. They're all nice and happy games where everyone gets along and someone wins. And then you go and you have, a really good time just hanging out and conversating about your life. So that's my great games.
Right, great. And I'm a nobody because I haven't published anything yet. So that's why I'm the host. And I'm going to sit here and let you guys be smart. So what have you guys been working on lately?
Well, if you want to do it in order here, I guess. I've been working on a board game, card game that it doesn't actually have a board. You'll be playing cards, and it plays in a series of levels. Some people have played a version of it in the past. It was known as One Way Out. It is no longer One Way Out. I changed the theme. I'm not right now. Actually, I'm talking to somebody about it, so I'm not at liberty to discuss what the theme's going to be. But it's done in a series of missions, and in each mission you are building out the board, kind of exploring, discovering, and each mission takes about 15 minutes. And you can decide how many you're going to do. And each mission is a completely different theme, whatever theme you... each theme is a deck of cards. And so it's very expandable. You can just buy the zombie theme deck if you want and whatever else and get together for an evening with friends. And somebody brings their Star Trek theme one. And a little bit Munchkin-like in that. That's probably the last thing it has in common with Munchkin.
Which is good, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. That's it's interesting that so every deck is a different theme and they all play together, basically.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You'll have a character of sorts, but it's relatively generic, but things that happen in one level will carry on to the next, so your character does actually progress as you play. So
That's kind of cool. Is that similar to the Pathfinder card game?
No, the Pathfinder is going to be considerably. That sounds really impressive. The Pathfinder ones. I'm hearing such great buzz about that. And no, I wouldn't compare it to that. Other than yes, your character does progress and so on, but it's just progression through the course of one evening. So, you know, if you want to sit down, you're getting together with friends and you want to play for an hour and a half, you just say, okay, well, I'm bringing these two decks, you bring those two, and everybody who brings a deck, that's 15 minutes. But at the conclusion of the evening, it's whoever has accomplished the most missions, they win for the evening.
Cool.
It's a big project.
Yeah, it sounds like
a lot of moving parts. Awesome, yeah. Though.
And cards. From
the design perspective, it is a lot. From the player perspective, it's not. There's a core set of rules that will take 4 pages to explain, and then I envision new decks introducing new rules that are just specific for that level. So.
Cool. Yeah, man.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. Wow. Scott, what are you working on?
So right now I have two major projects going on. The first one is the Kings of Iron Steam expansion. It's called World's Fair. And I'm doing a lot of blind playtesting right now. One nice thing about having the game already being out there is I was able to reach out on BGG and get a bunch of people really quickly to help me out with it. So finding it very interesting to revisit a game I designed about 4 years ago and be, well, what would I do differently if I could do that all over again? So that's been quite an experience. And then I'm also doing
a children's
storytelling game. Well, one of the main things looking back at the game is players can really easily get into like a set path around the board. I really want them to move around more, basically. So I'm introducing mechanics that's going to really make them kind of forced to leave their comfort zone during the course of the game. Introducing a few new scoring mechanics and technology cards, which kind of takes the play to an even higher level as a drafting mechanic to it, which I'm very excited about. And more characters. I'm adding more characters, too. Because that's what everyone wants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's got to be a difficult... That's going to be difficult to, you know, you don't want to water down the original experience. The fans who are already there, you know, enjoy the game. You want to bring something new without breaking the core system. I'd like, you know, what insights do you have on that?
I actually am kind of taking the same approach that...
Go ahead.
I kind of like what Queen does with their modules, where you can kind of add in a little bit at a time, and I'm kind of taking that approach with this expansion as 3 different modules, so players can kind of mix and match as they like, and I'm hoping that'll kind of allow them to find their ideal area without ruining the experience that they liked so much to even seek out an expansion.
Mm-hmm. But you were saying that also with the children's game, mm-hmm. Storyteller?
Oh, yeah, it's a choose-your-own-adventure storytelling game with a bunch of mini-games, and it's for really little kids, ages 5 to 8, so it's really a new experience for me, and it has a storytelling book. It's actually going to be published by 8th Summit Games. People did Agents of Smersh, so they love storytelling games, and I kind of met with them, and we're designing it together from scratch, so I'm used to selling a fully designed game, but this one we started off with really nothing. So it's been a lot of work, but I think it's going to turn out pretty good.
So how do you get playtesters for that?
What was that?
How do you get playtesters for that?
We haven't even gotten to that part yet. So he has young kids, so that's going to help out. Okay. I'm not sure what I'm going to be able to contribute. I mean, I guess I think like a young kid, but I can read higher than an 8-year-old, so I don't know. It's going to be an interesting ride for the both of us.
Yeah, that seems like it'd be a heck of a challenge.
Yeah, it's weird working from just a pitch. I always feel like I've heard one of the people that I follow on Twitter, like Rob Daviau, I guess, he talks about, the guy that did Risk Legacy, I guess. He talks about pitching his ideas to companies, and I'm just so floored by the pitch. Kind of almost like to hobby-like companies.
Yeah.
To do that, I just heard about, I guess, that's coming through.
Can you get a little closer to the mic?
Yeah, we're not getting all your audio.
Yeah.
All right.
It is interesting because they kind of tell you not just to pitch a game just being a pitch. Like, you have to have a fully designed game.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of going against what everyone tells you to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be really intimidating, I would think.
So did you have a relationship with the publisher ahead of time? I mean, where they approached you for it?
I actually did not. I had played Agents of Smurf and really liked it. I thought it was pretty inventive. And I looked on their website just to see if they were looking for games or anything like that. And he had a call out. He was looking for a writer. And I've published some short stories before. And I contacted him just thinking that, you know, he was looking for, I don't know, maybe an expansion for Agents of Smurf or something like that, looking for someone to help come up with encounters, which sounded kind of cool to me. And he told me a little bit of this idea he had. He wanted to make a children's storytelling game. I thought it was a good idea. I wrote up, like, kind of a few writing samples of mine, and I said, you know, this is kind of what I'd be able to do. He thought it was good, and just kind of started to design from there. So it's not something that happens, at least I don't think very often, but kind of lucked into it, if anything, but it's turning out to be a very interesting and good experience, so.
It's cool. Kind of serendipity there for you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's amazing what a friendly email can do. I mean, that's really how a lot of this stuff starts out, so.
Yeah, you know, and I tell you, that's a gem. I mean, in terms of, you know, you say you just lucked into it, that sort of thing. Well, you didn't luck into sending him a letter of inquiry. You know, it was positive steps, right? Yep. I mean, putting yourself out there. That's people ask so often, you know, what advice do you give to new designers? Get your stuff out there. Let people know that you're busy, that you're doing things, right?
Oh, so. I agree. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good advice for people like me. Yeah, and so, I mean, that's kind of one of the ideas here of this whole show, of course, is to kind of share that kind of advice with people out there who are in the same position as me that want to make contacts. Let's talk more about that. Do you have any advice on how to make that initial connection? Any tricks for those initial communications? I mean, maybe you can share some of your personal experiences in kind of breaking in there.
Sure. Would you like me to start, or
yeah, by all means.
I've been doing the same technique for quite a while, but you know, it's hard to say this is a great technique when I have one game published and one on the way. You know, that's not a huge track record. I meet publishers at conventions, and specifically Origins and Gen Con. I wrote this up for Grant Rodiek's Hyperbole website, the Hyperbole Games website.
Sure.
Just about pitching at conventions, and I can paraphrase a lot of the ideas there. But basically, look, the publishers are there. They're busy. Their main job at a convention is to move the products they have right now. But if you can approach respectfully, having done your homework, being prepared, and having something that fits their portfolio, they're happy to talk to you. They're happy to listen to you, right? You have to have your pitch ready, and your pitch needs to distinguish your game from the field. If you walk up and say, it's like this meets this, you know, it's this game meets this game, they'll probably suppress an eye roll. You know, nobody wants to hear the next this thing, you know, the Dominion meets Zombies or whatever. And I'm sure I've just alienated a lot of people who are making Dominion meets Zombie games. But, you know, what is it that sets your game apart? And if you can articulate that in a few, you know, a few sentences. And the idea initially on the first pitch is not to, you know, come look at my demo this moment. It's to set up that 15-minute meeting where you can run through what's, you know, how your game plays and so on. And I, like I said, I've had good success. I've had good success mostly in getting publishers to take the game, you know, to actually, or to sit down and play through the prototype and then take the game afterwards, take the prototype. And, you know, some of those have panned out and some haven't. But anyway, in terms of sending letters, sending emails, things like that, I've done a lot of that. I had some good back and forth communication years ago with Steve Jackson Games. They were very receptive. They were very supportive. And I found that through the whole community, all the game publishers. Nobody is obnoxious or off-putting in any way. They, you know, they do through designs. So they're not going to be stepping on their future designers. But the thing is, going back to the point earlier, put yourself out there. Nobody's going to publish the game as long as it's sitting in your office. So,
that's good advice. Yeah. Scott, what do you have to add here?
Well, one thing that he kind of mentioned is whenever you first meet a publisher at a convention, your goal isn't necessarily to play the game with them that minute. And I think that's something very important. I feel a lot of first-time game designers, they think they're going to walk up to the game and they're going to walk away with a contract 5 minutes later, mm-hmm. which isn't the case.
Yeah.
Your kind of goal is the next step during the pitch process. It's, you know, when you first meet them, you know, first one-minute pitch, your goal is to, like Corey said, sit down with them for 15 minutes and go through actually what your bits are. Your purpose of that meeting is to have them take the game home and play with their own game groups. Sure. Then after that, you actually start to get into a phase where you could get an offer or something like that. I feel like a lot of first-time game designers gets really frustrated that, you know, you have to take it step by step. You're not going to walk up to them and say, it's Dominion versus Zombies, and they're not going to hand you a paycheck right off the bat.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Looks like we lost TC there, so I guess he's still having some trouble. So I guess it's just us guys. So
cool.
Okay. So kind of one of the points of the hangout that we do in this format is that we want to kind of give us the opportunity to help each other with any stuff that we're stuck on or anything that we want to bounce ideas around about. I don't know if you guys have anything in that kind of stage. You know, Scott, with your storytelling game, if there's any bits of that that you want to try and work out with other people, or if you guys don't have anything, I can kind of throw out a new idea that I just had over the past week, whatever you want to do. I mean, you're the guest, so you get dibs.
Scott, I'm handing off to you first.
All right, well, I'm trying to think what problems I've been hitting this week. This week has been mostly Kings of Iron Steam, which has been going pretty well. But well, I guess my children's storytelling game, one thing that we're having an issue with is basically the length of the game. So for an age group of 5 to 8-year-olds, they're not going to like to sit down for an hour and a half long game. So we're very ambitious to start off with. We wanted to have, I think it was 7 spaces, each space being a very unique encounter with a story element, a mini game element. And the problem we're having is we're not really sure where to scale it down to. We have all so much written. We hate to lose it, but scaling down and playtesting is going to be an issue for us moving forward. And that's kind of where we're at.
So you say you choose your adventure and you have a little mini game?
Yeah, in fact, I can give you a little bit of... The game's pretty simple. There's okay. Right now there's 6 spaces. Each space has a character on it.
Okay.
The pawn moves forward. You flip over what the character is. That'll decide which character you're encountering. Then there will be two dice rolled. The players will get to pick which dice they like. The dice will have different symbols on them. It'll be like a sword or a teacup or a book. And that'll decide the encounter even further. And then it'll be a probably 250 to 300 word little story, and there will be a mini game at the end of it. It could be something physical, like you have to toss the dice back and forth, or there's a deck of cards that can be a simple memory game or a matching game or something of that sort. So as we're writing these, we're having a very hard time judging the length that it'll be taking. It's designed to be played with both a kid and a parent, or babysitter, or aunt, or uncle. So they'll be doing the actual reading out of the storybook, but since it's a game very far outside my comfort zone, that's some of the problems we're encountering.
So does the dice roll impact what story is read? Which story is read?
Yes, it does.
Okay, I missed that part. Yeah, okay. So you have to come up with... what, 36 variations or more? I mean, what is it, 2d6 or how many dice?
2d6, but each dice has two symbols on it, so it ends up being 36 per space.
Wow.
So, yeah, good thing you're a writer.
Yeah.
Wow, so you have to come up with one for the sword and teacup and one for the sword and turtle and one for the sword and whatever else. Is that it?
Yeah, exactly. And Jason Maxwell, the publisher, he's also getting a writing credit on the game, and he's meeting me about 30% of the way.
Picking the easy ones?
Yeah, the easy ones, yeah.
That's funny.
No, that sounds solid already, but so your problem is whittling down, you know, trying to tweak your answers, basically, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and I think it does kind of go into a larger designer problem, is that you hate to cut out ideas. So if we want to make the game smaller, we might have to trim some story elements or eliminate some spaces from the game, which designers always hate to do that. I mean, you always hate to lose ideas that you've worked on.
Sure. Yeah. TC, we got your back.
Yeah, I feel like I'm having the most technical difficulties I've ever had.
Yeah.
Hopefully everyone can hear me right now.
Yeah, we sure can.
Yep.
Okay. I really like, I love your guys' like enthusiasm when it comes to like just any type of game, because small or bigger, or small or children's game, I just get, I get into anything. I mean, I, for the first time, had an idea for a children's game the other day, which I might actually pursue. Which is weird for me, because I usually try to do the more... I've started to do the more complex games now, the gamer games, so...
Well, what's your idea?
Well, I'll just say it. I mean, like, if someone wants to steal it, they can. But basically, the idea is kids have a lot of imagination, I guess. And the idea
That's
is
what I hear, you know. I don't know that for sure, but people tell me.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. But the idea would be to just move on that idea and get people get a child to give an inanimate object some characteristics. So the idea is it's called the box is ... and it could be the box is a snake, the box is a rake, the box is anything. And the idea is that it's just a fabric red box. And inside there, that's pretty much your rules, and you have flashcards that come with it. And the idea is to have the parent, when they're very young, act out what the box actually is and get the kid to guess what the box is. Mm-hmm. So whether if it's a snake, you're like, you know, you're moving the snake around and like biting his arm. But as they get older, they guess what the attribute is. There's no real scoring. I mean, this is for really young. This is like 3 or 4. But as they get older, they can start, with parental guidance, get involved and start doing it themselves, acting out what... It's almost like charades, but you're putting that charades onto a little object, a bright red box. The idea being that they start to... The box can be anything, and they start imagining that things can be anything, and there's no preconceptions on what you know, what is, I don't know, I think I like that psychological education there, that it kind of means that anything can be anything, and there's no, you don't have to prejudge something. So teaching kids that early, and then getting them that to get involved. So when they get a little older, they can start doing that with their friends. And now they're acting it out for their friends, and the friends can guess, and they can get involved. So as they get older, it kind of grows with them. But really, it's kind of like inspired by, I don't know, Go Away Monster. I don't know if you guys have heard of that game.
Yeah. I have, actually, yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah, sweet. Yeah. Okay, so I love Go Away Monster, or at least just the concept of it. Because kids at that age don't, I guess, get the concept of winning and losing as much. Mm-hmm. So it's good to have a game that you can always win for a younger child. It's kind of open-ended. And the parent feels good because they're involved in the actual process as opposed to not and just playing Candyland.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you say that because the game that we've been designing, the kids automatically win as well. We don't. There's no scoring. It's just you play through the game, and that's your experience.
Oh, yeah, and I think for younger kids, that's a really good thing. I mean, if you can tailor it so that when they're older, they get the competition aspect a little bit, that's even better, I think, because then they start to learn the loser-winner kind of thing. But at the same time, leaving it open-ended so you don't have to play that way, I don't know, just I like the options of children's games present. It's never something I'll break out unless I'm really drunk and at a party. But
well, I think it's very promising. I'm also very glad that we're not getting bogged down in this esoteric discussion of what is a game. I'm sorry if you're sitting around having fun activity and you're laughing and enjoying yourself. I don't care if it's a game in some dictionary definition or not. You know, I'm putting it on the game shelf. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, this is technically an activity, right? I mean, it's an activity.
Yeah.
Marketed
as a game.
Yeah.
It's going in Toys R Us.
Exactly, yeah.
No, I really like it, and I'm imagining, you know, a lot of it is, the objects that are on the cards, it's going to be easier for the kids to adapt and adopt and start acting it out themselves as opposed to guessing what the parent's doing if there's a picture on the cards.
Exactly. And that's what I was thinking. Just they're kind of like, almost like those early flashcards where you would have a picture of the item, big letters, short words. So it's never like, and then you can also tailor it so that there's you can use cards that only rhyme or cards that only have animals on them, you know, that kind of thing. So maybe they're color-coded, even the cards, but just idea that, you know. Yeah, but you're yes.
Yeah, so there's no ennui card or, you know, ambivalence card. Or
that's the adult expansion. I like that.
Okay.
Well, you know, I think you probably need to put in, you know, nouns and adjectives and verbs, you know. Because nouns are obvious, a rake, a snake, a flashlight, whatever. But if you put in sticky or crunchy, that kind of could add another layer of kind of fun and interest and maybe reinforce a little bit more learning. And then verbs, things like angry or silly, you know.
I wonder, that's curious. I would like to test that to see what age. What age would be, like, good for those?
Sounds really interesting.
Yeah. Scott, on yours, I was just thinking, you know, you're talking about, you know, a lot of short stories here. That, you know, we were talking about the volume based on the number of dice rolls and so on. You got to come up with that many mini games too.
The mini games we do duplicate a little bit.
Okay.
But we do have a fair amount of mini games. Mini games is kind of used liberally. I mean, sometimes it's like, I don't know. Sometimes they're like open-ended questions. Sometimes they're discussion questions between the parents. But yeah, it is a large volume of content, and we probably got in over our heads with it.
So is this going to be? Is this just a book, or with it comes with a couple dice? Or you said there were cards too, though.
Yeah, it comes with a small deck of 18 cards, two dice, a game board, so you could actually move your pawn around, some okay. tokens for the creatures, and then a nice thick storybook.
Okay, cool. That's great.
That's cool. Yeah. So this is not an iteration of Kings of Arinsteam, then, which is good.
No. The storytelling variant comes way later. Way later. That'll be expansion number 4.
Module.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I've actually been working on a game for a few weeks now that I don't even really know what to call it. It's about trolls turning over rocks to get bugs, different bugs, to using as ingredients in cakes and cookies. Because everybody knows that trolls like to bake, right?
Of course.
Yeah, and it's a memory game, but it's also...
Oh, those cookies? I'm sorry.
Yeah. I would like to call it Troll House Cookies or Troll House Bakery. I don't know if I could get away with that. Yeah. But so it's a memory game. You start out by laying 12 cards face down, and then everybody takes a turn flipping one over and then flipping it back. After everybody's flipped two cards, then you pick up a card into your hand, and you're trying to get all the ingredients for recipe. And when you at the end of the phase, or in phase 3, you bake a cake or you bake a cookie or whatever. And first, in different recipes are worth different points. And so when you get to 15 points, you win. But every now and then, a knight, you'll flip over a knight card, and the knight will attack you, and you have to discard two cards to get rid of him. And if you can get a princess, and you can always play a princess to chase away a knight. Or a princess can be used as a wild card in a recipe to take the place of any ingredient. And it's been fun to kind of think in that sort of simple, kind of really, really stripped down, easily approachable for a younger person kind of view. And I'm really having a lot of fun doing that.
Mm-hmm. I'm really growing to appreciate the less is more game. You look at some of the... And I don't just think in terms of sales, but you look at some of the best-selling games, the apples to apples or Cards Against Humanity. But that's two types of cards, and that's it, with a lot of legs. The new trend with mini games, with Love Letter, that sort of trend. It's an interesting space to me. I haven't come up with anything quite yet. I started to think about actually coming up with a 15-card deck that was Rock, Paper, Scissors, Lizard, Spock, a variation on that where you basically have three of each suit, and certain suits would trump other suits, but they wouldn't trump others, that sort of thing. So if you had Spock, it would trump this, but it wouldn't trump that. And there are three Spocks of different values, so if you played Spock, someone could play a higher Spock, things like that. Played around a bit with that, but that space or that theme, that Rock, Paper, Scissors, Lizard, Spock, thank you to Big Bang, is thoroughly trod. A lot of folks are playing in that, so I'm stepping back from that.
Yeah.
But I'm just struck by that, Rob. I mean, that you've described some of the other things that you've worked on in the past. And this one sounds more, in the adolescent range. Is that a space you like to get into?
Yeah, I think so. I just kind of naturally lean that way, I think, for my designs, because I like simple things. I like easy mechanics. I like games where, I enjoy strategy games, but the games that I want to make are the games that facilitate fun hanging out. That you're not putting all your energy into making intense strategic decisions. I mean, those games are great, but I find that when I'm having the most fun with my friends, it's because we're playing a lighter game that just allows us to relax and have fun like that. And so that's the kind of thing that I want to be responsible for, I guess.
Yeah, I like that. I'm sorry? Oh, you say you like that game. Yeah. I call it the Mid-Atlantic game. That's a phrase I use from time to time. It's somewhere between a Euro and American. But I absolutely agree with the idea of the social aspect of the game. I was tweeting about this a little bit yesterday, that I like games that make you think in different ways, and some are deep strategic things, some are quick tactical, things like that. But among my least favorite are games with timers. You can, like, Pandemic doesn't have a timer, but there's stress there, there's pressure there, you know, that you know things are getting worse, and you're running out of time, per se, but there's no timer. I like a game that you can talk over, you know, that you can chat over. And if I've got a timer going, I can't do that. It doesn't lend itself to that. Right. It doesn't make those games bad. It just doesn't lend it itself to the type of experience that I like to enjoy.
Yeah. We actually have a Twitter question here from Flash Forward Games. The question is, what are your steps after publisher rejection? And then specifically, Corey, he says, when do I see you back in Toronto? Because he wants to hang out.
Hi, Chris. Chris, if you're not following Flash Forward Games, you really should. Chris has been a big contribution to the game design community in the Toronto area, and just real encouraging to everybody. I really love one of his designs right now, June de Lune. My French sucks, but
which I still haven't printed out yet, but I will.
Do that. It's an elegant tile playing game, but I'm reluctant to call it tile playing. It's poetry. It's very, very nice. I got a chance to play it at Snakes and Lattes in Toronto when I was in town visiting. Got a chance to see it. Anyway, I only have positive things to say. To answer the question, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of ranting here, but the answer to the question is I cry a lot. No. the rejections was Chris's specific question. And I get plenty. I got a long way, actually, with the game I was talking about earlier that was originally called One Way Out. I was in talks with Mayfair for about 2 years with that game, and it eventually died in blind playtest. You know, can you imagine the gut punch on that, right? So that sucked. And then 5 months later, Gravwall got picked up. So it's just press through it. It just keep going. But don't get locked in on that one game. Gravwall is my, I believe, it's depending on how you score, it was my eighth design. So the hardest thing is if you're completely invested and locked into one game, that one game is going to be your one game. That just really exacerbates the gut punches that come along.
Yeah, I actually just got a publisher rejection yesterday, so that's exciting. A very poignant topic to discuss.
So how are you dealing with that? Any medication?
Well, I had a lot to drink at a wedding last night, so that helped. Yeah, no, I mean, whatever, it's going to happen, you know, and it's going to happen more often than not, I think. So the best thing I think that I ever did in starting to try and do this for real was to start a podcast and start talking to other people like you guys about this to just kind of keep that communication going and just always keep looking forward.
Do you think it's tougher with I mean, I think as far as rejection goes, it's probably tougher with a heavier game, but do you think it's tougher to get your foot in the door with a lighter game than a heavier game? I mean, I mean just in general, it seems to me that I've been rejected before, but also took a long time before actually submitting it, and I don't submit many things, so I don't have too much rejection, but eventually I'll get more rejection, I know it, but getting the foot in the door really helps. So I had a slightly more, it's still light, medium weight, but I mean, a slightly heavier game than most with Viva Java, so it would kind of appeal to a certain type of gamer. Hey, that's good. Yeah. Okay. But at the same time, it seems like the lighter one's a harder thing, unless it's really, really unique. It seems like a harder, light seems to be harder to get in the door, I guess. I don't know.
I think it depends on the publisher a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and Scott, yeah, I mean, you did Martian Dice, so, I mean, like, how was that originally? Was that...
Well, Kings of Iron Steam actually got... Well, Kings of Iron Steam, I got accepted before Martian Dice. Martian Dice came, was signed and designed after Kings of Iron Steam was already with Tasty Minstrel. So, my first game was a heavy game, which is published later. But, yeah, I mean, I think for companies like Tasty Minstrel, heavier games tend to make a bigger splash with them, but you know, company like Indie Board and Cards, they want to see light games. They want to see light, family-friendly. If you give them a heavy game, you're not going to last through the first minute. Sorry, Travis, some of I'm talking to you for you too much, but it's just my experience so far.
Well, I'm just trying to think about it from the game publisher's perspective. You know, they're about moving units. And if you, I don't know, I'd like to do the metrics on that. Look at the weights assigned on BoardGameGeek of the most popular games on BoardGameGeek. Now that's a isolated environment. You know, that's gamers for gamers. But take that weight score and then hold that up next to the units sold, and I wonder how that is. There is a market for heavy games. There are, you know, there is, but especially, well, more so in Europe than here, in the U.S. If you're talking to a U.S. publisher, they've got to keep in the back of their mind, you know, all the time. They might love your game, and just realize it's not going to move enough to justify going through the entire production value of doing it. But yeah. To your point, TC, I don't know. I've only had luck selling, lighter games. None of my games are roll and move. You know, it's not. You know, I'm not doing left center right.
It's not entry level, but I mean.
Yeah, but you know, I'm deep in the, I'm going to say casual game world, right? And by the way, Scott, I didn't put you together with Martian Dice. Big fan. I love the game. We're big fans on Liar's Dice and a few other. Well, what was?
Liar's Dice is the best dice game ever created. Sorry to say, I love Martian Dice, but Liar's Dice is by far the best game ever made.
It's in my top five.
Yeah, it is. It is really solid, but it's a much different thing too, because you know that's got the whole bluffing and things like that. But this is to push your luck. It was Cosmic Wimpout another good. But really, for my money, if you want to talk about just push your luck games, I would put Martian Dice above Cosmic Wimpout and above the Zombie Dice, just hands down.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you gotta love the cows, the chickens, you know, everything.
So. Well, you always go for the chickens; they're the lucky ones. I didn't put that in the rule book for obvious reasons.
I did not know that. See, okay, I'm glad I tuned in. Okay.
Cool. I will. I guess this is steering the conversation in a different direction than lighter games and everything, but I mean, it's kind of in the lighter vein. I guess I was working on something this week that I wanted to see do you think any publisher would touch something like this? Is kind of so basically going with rejection. I would expect to get rejected a million times over if I were to put this idea in front of people. So it came about from a tweet from Ben Pinchback, who's one of the Fleet designers, Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback. But he made a comment about reading the entire Wikipedia page for Xenon, the noble gas, and saying it was like, well, now that boring thing's over, now maybe I can not procrastinate and do something. So I decided to read the Xenon page like an idiot, and then I immediately came up with a game idea out of Xenon. So I decided to make the driest game ever about isolating the element Xenon, and I'm calling it Xenon Profiteer. But basically in the game, it's like you take normal air into your system, it's like resource deconversion. You take air, and you take away the stuff you strip away and distill out all the other elements until you only have xenon, and then you can use the xenon to do things, like to fulfill contracts and I don't know, increase your distillation towers.
Well, there's a big market for xenon out there. I mean,
yeah, so. I think so it ends up being and it kind of converged into a instead of a deck builder, it took my favorite thing out of deck builders, which is getting rid of the actual cards. So it's deck purification, I guess. So you just get rid of air. You get rid of oxygen and krypton and all the other stuff and distill it out as you're playing. And every turn you have to get rid of stuff. So you have to keep taking in more resources in order to keep your system flowing. But at the same time, it reduces your efficiency to do so, and then you're fulfilling contracts with the xenon that you finally isolate, and there's government and private contracts and all that. But it sounds super boring, but it kind of works. That's what I'm wondering. Would people look at this and go, okay, let's completely retheme it, or would they take it as is if it was good?
I guess it would depend on the pitch. Your pitch made it sound interesting to me, but yeah. I'll be honest, if I saw a box that was about, it's, you know, isolating xenon, lost him, I think.
We lost him.
Yeah, I do think it would be, I don't know, hard-pressed to find a lot of people who would pick up that box.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, that's an interesting idea, though, the deck builder in reverse, you know?
Yeah.
Where you start with the whole deck, and your goal is to just cut it down to one specific thing in your deck.
I've heard that. He's back.
He's gone so well.
Yeah. Rob was just saying that, you know, it's the first he'd heard of a kind of a reverse deck builder. And I'm hearing a few folks in that space talking about something similar, where it's a deck thinning rather than building. But the thematically, I'm there with you, but I just hope the marketing people can put that in a couple of paragraphs, right? That's just a hard one to pull off. Yeah.
And that's what I wonder. But I don't know. It's just kind of that thing that I've always found to be interesting about gaming in general, is that you can take the driest thing and the most boring thing ever, and it suddenly becomes a really interesting game system, and that just pulls it right through. I would never have expected myself to be playing the games that I do and enjoying them just the way they are. So it's kind of like that whole middle finger to the system.
Okay, so you're a publisher. I come up to you and I say, look, I've got this game. I can't tell you how long it runs, okay? And it's got some... people get knocked out sometimes really early in the game, and it's about trading real estate in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah.
Fantastic. I would love it.
I'm in.
I would make make 10 million copies of it.
Yes. And you can skin it any way you want. You want a Star Wars one? You want? Yeah, we can.
Yeah. I get your point. I guess it's just it really is the and that's what's cool about. But I think that's what's cool about board games in general, is the fact that you can bring out the qualities of something that pretty much no one would really think to make. Make into something interesting, and it just makes gripping and strategic. So I think it's kind of an interesting idea. I know, like you said, I don't think the deck purification idea is really a new thing. I think most people like the idea of culling, and there's probably a lot of people working on that. But I think getting it to tie in thematically is kind of the...
That's it exactly. And just thinking about just mechanic first, and I'm a mechanic first designer. But just thinking about mechanic first, and I'm going to make a reverse deck builder, and I'll just make up something, you know, maybe it's the same theme as Dominion, but it's, you know, done in reverse. That's not horribly exciting. But when you do tie it as well to a theme like you're talking about, then that's going to sell it. Yeah. And I'm afraid to tell you, you're not the first designer to feature Xenon in a game design. There's a Xenon card in Gravois.
Yeah, yes, I know, yes.
Sorry, shameless plug, right?
Hey,
all of the Twitterverse just groaned, is like, wow, Corey just plugged Gravwell again, wow.
Yeah. Hey, but yeah, it's the periodic table of elements has really taken off lately, so.
Yeah. Well, guys, we're running out of time here. We started a little late, and we've gone over our normal time, so let's wrap this up here, and once again, tell everybody out there who might be listening or watching later how they can find you. Corey, let's start with you.
I think I put it in. It's a little hard to see, but I think I put my Twitter handle on there. It's C_M_Young on Twitter. That's how I communicate for the most part.
Great.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter as well. Scott_Alms. I forgot to put it on my nice little name tag, but it'll be there next time, I guess.
Great.
And I'm at Puppy Shogun. That's PUPPY Shogun. I don't know. That's where I usually am too, as well. So.
Okay. Yeah, Twitter is the place. And everybody should buy Gravwell and Kings of Aaron Steam and Martian Dice and Viva Java and Viva Java Dice.
Of course.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And everybody should also listen to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. And you can follow me on Twitter at poorly_designed. And that's all we got. That's all she wrote. So thanks, guys, for hanging out with us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Rob.
All right. Thank you.
Yep, all right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And thanks, everybody out there. Bye-bye.